There we go with John Curley, Sherry Ellicker Show. And I got good news for the Sherry fans out there. I think I'm Sherry Ellicker now. Open the door there. And here she comes. Oh, new song.
A new attitude taking over in our mind.
Yeah!
Help, 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 help. Give us a brand new self, self, self.
Go, Sherry, go, 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 go.
Put it off. Put it off.
Yeah.
Put it off.
Wow, she got a tube top on. Look at you. Wow.
I am rested and relaxed.
Yes,
and just
I hear it.
Wanted to go today. I just was like, wow. So much energy.
Wow, is right. So much. All righty. If you're in the business, people are dying to get into it, Sherry.
I know.
Andrew, that's a rim shot.
You're dead right.
There's a cemetery for sale. It's an old one. It's in Seattle. They want $1.5 million for it. The deal is you got to keep it a cemetery, obviously. Can't knock everything down and then try to put something else in there. I was looking up to see how much money you can make owning a cemetery. There are laws and rules, like after a certain number of years, you can kind of exhume the old customers and move them off somewhere.
Really?
Start over again. When you get the plot, yeah. And when you get the plot, you pay an additional fee, which then goes towards maintenance. Because you think, okay, if I got this business and there's no more room, no more customers, how do I pay to maintain the place? Well, the fund is in there and it has enough money to keep the things going. But in certain states, you can, at a certain point, kind of move some of those old guys out and put some new folks in. State of Washington lists the top 10 to most likely run out of space. Washington is number 10 on the list, California number 1. Just not enough room. So this thing is for sale for $1.5 million, Sherry. Anything else in there that makes you want to buy it?
Well, it says that the court-appointed receiver says that he doesn't want condos built on it and that they will not – they cannot exhume the bodies if somebody buys it. Now, he's interested in it as well, but what they're calling this is a business opportunity for cemetery companies or funeral home people looking to expand. So it's really supposed to stay like it is, but I know that they occasionally they will double sell plots. So somebody may be buried on top of somebody else.
What?
Yes. Yes. That's Yeah, we have that at the Curley plot over in Pennsylvania, outside of Philadelphia. Yeah. So you got grandma's there, Nana, Pop-Pop, then my dad. There's room for one more of us. And then we got two to the right and two to the left. So we got enough space in there for everybody. Yeah, they just stack them high.
Right.
Yeah, like pancakes. It's a high stack, low stack, small stack. And they put whipped cream on the smiling face if it's going to be the happy.
Sometimes berries
Denny's
too.
for eyes. So I don't know if anybody's going to buy the thing. You also have to pay for it. I think they looks like they've got some back taxes or some other issues as well. The people that owned it had it since 1999. Cemeteries, I looked online, there's a bunch for sale. They said, oh, you can make money on it. Make about $1 million a year is what you're caught with. That's the revenue, but then you take all the expenses out of it. You got to maintain it, take care of it. And I don't know, in Washington, I couldn't find the laws or the regulations regarding when you could exhume and move people over to another spot. So there you go. Get it for $1.5 million. It's going to be land, basically, that nobody's going to want. And it's going to just sit there. Somebody has to eventually maintain it, I hope. If the money's in the funds, that they go into this trust fund that pays for the maintenance of the thing.
Right, but they didn't mention how much space is actually available. So if you're sold out, basically, what's that? Where are you going to get any more profit? Because they sell these grave sites like they sell condos. They're basically selling a piece of land, and if there's no land left to bury anybody, what's in
I
it for
get it,
you?
Sherry.
So put your checkbook away, Mr. Curley.
Oh, I'm not thinking about that, but it's 10 acres. They're in Seattle for $1.5 million.
Could you put like a tiny house on there and live there?
They don't think people will want to do that. They said that so many people have seen Poltergeist that they don't really want to, they don't get a lot of takers for that.
Yeah. Another law has come out, new bill in Washington, making distribution of fake AI nudes of real people a crime. Ugh. Yeah, put your camera away, Sherry.
Sorry. This is HB 1999. The person can now not, they cannot create, possess, distribute, or view fabricated sexually explicit images of minors. Mm-hmm. That's part one. Also, they cannot knowingly disclose fabricated intimate image of others without their consent. So that includes anybody. They say that, you know, this is photos, video, digital, anything that was created by digitation. And the prime, most of this is about revenge porn.
Yeah. Joe got a picture yesterday of somebody that had a cutout of me. They had my face in bed with somebody. The woman did not look happy having me laying there next to her. I looked really happy in the photo, right, Joe?
Oh, yeah.
But she looked like she was asleep.
Huh. Was it Princess Kate?
No, it was a woman who looked just sleeping. She had glasses on. She didn't look like, you know, she was in a state of ecstasy, more like just... like maybe she should have been over at that cemetery or something. She had this kind of
a disappointing
expression
date
on her face.
Wait,
but I looked very happy, didn't I?
You did, yeah. Overjoyed.
Was anybody nude?
No.
No, I mean, under the covers, baby.
That was such a great question. Yeah. I ask myself that every day.
Okay, then this HB 1999 does not apply.
No. They need to do something because this AI stuff... I was talking to this guy on this plane yesterday who does a lot of this tech stuff. And he said every 18 months, it accelerates by 50 to 100%. So, Joe, when you talked the other day about, gosh, the advances of the thing just seem to be multiplying over. Yeah. So exponentially increasing. So the next 18 months is going to be even more sophisticated and more believable than what we have right now.
Yeah, it's just a matter of time. And that's the problem, is that laws and other things can't keep up with the technology. So there's going to be a workaround on all of this stuff eventually.
Yeah. Well, they also, the legislators can't keep up with the technology either. Do you remember when Congress was talking to Zuckerberg or whatever? So, Mr. Zuckerberg, so somebody can get a FaceTube account. Facebook. Yeah, and so on that you can get you can send photos. And they're like, yes, Senator. Like, this guy's had no idea what they're talking about, asking the questions. A guy that would like to be your governor, Mark Mullett, who I'm a fan of. Mark Mullett, I like him a lot. I saw a poll, this was taken in January, I don't know if it's changed much, but 32% of people did not know him. That's unfortunate. He's a good guy. He's got $1 million in the bank. Bob Ferguson, he's got 5.8 million. Dave Riker's got 2 million. So Mullett needs to do something to sort of break out. If you're a Democrat, you just can't see yourself voting Republican. 53% of people in the state of Washington are Democrat. 34% are Republican. So you're like, God, Bob Ferguson scares me. Yes, he should. You got to go Mullett. So I guess Mark Mullett's kind of cashing in. Drew Mickelson has the story from King 5 about Mullett,
an Issaquah husband and father of six, considers himself a moderate Democrat. He wants the state to streamline housing construction permits. He says he'll vote to keep the state's climate law in place in November, but plans on voting to throw out the capital gains tax, which raises funds for child care subsidies. Mullett thinks the state has plenty of money to work with.
36 is going for pit. Good pit.
And earlier this month, he voted to roll back restrictions on police chases, reversing a 2021 law he voted for.
What we need from our government is the ability to raise your hand and admit if you've made a mistake. Don't just defend your votes. Be willing to have the intellectual honesty to say, hey, we screwed up. We should have done it better. Let's fix it.
And that was a mistake that you made.
Yes, 100%.
Mullett knows he's going up against some big names in the August primary, but he remains hopeful. Whatever happens, his time in the state Senate is over. And in the final days of the session, his colleagues honored outgoing Senator Mullett by wearing mullet wigs.
Right now, when people think of mullet, let's be honest, they think of a bad hairstyle from the 80s. Although I will say, the mullet's coming back this year.
In another controversial vote, Mark Mullett was the only state senator to vote against making pickleball the official sport of the state of Washington. The two-time high school state tennis champion says pickleballers just take up too many tennis courts in the state. In Issaquah, Drew Mickelson, King 5 News.
Wow. I play pickleball sometimes.
He shouldn't have admitted that.
Jacob, it's not about you. It's not about you. By the way, tying that into the first story, he just dug his own grave by not supporting pickleball as the state sport.
Oh, are you withdrawing yours now? Because I know you pickleball is the curly, the official curly sport.
I'm a believer. I am a believer in pickleball.
Okay.
So just got to get the funds together in order to pay the $8,000 to Corey to have him put the pickleball courts in. But yes. Yes. Again, you haven't played it, so you don't know, Sherry.
Well, and yeah, you have a long history with No. You have a long history of pickleball.
It doesn't take long, Sherry.
Well, you played what, twice?
Let me ask Jacob. You pick a pickleball? Pickleball?
I play pickleball sometimes.
All right, there you go.
Pickleball. Pickleball.
I don't know how, I can't figure out how to keep score, but I do like to play it. It doesn't take long. It's like, you know, you get, wow, this is great. You know, you just try it once. Like, I'm all in on this. Think of something you did once and you enjoyed, and then you wanted to do it again, Sherry.
There's a wide range of activities that I could mention. But I don't think I've ever had. I don't think that I've ever had that experience with any sporting event or sport. Never.
Okay. Then you're not doing it right if it's not a sporting event. That's what
I'm saying. Okay.
Okay. Good cover. Good save on yourself there.
Thank you.
Well, ripping through the stories. We'll have to save. We have time for this? Yeah, let's do this one now. Supreme Court, state of Washington says, we're going to get rid of the bar. No more bar exam. If you pass a lawyer, if you're going to be a lawyer, you don't have to pass the bar to become an attorney in the state of Washington. I assume, although they didn't exactly come right out and say it, other states have said this. The problem is they see it is they don't have enough, you know, minorities. You don't have enough underrepresented people in there. So if we get rid of the bar exam, we'll get more in there. Well, if that's the reason to do it, then you've got a big problem. But if you want to get rid of it because you think, well, it doesn't really test a lawyer's knowledge, it's basically a money grab for the people who do these things. So I looked up to see which states got rid of them. So Wisconsin got rid of them. Then I looked up Wisconsin, number of lawyers, and the number of complaints against lawyers. It was under, I think it was like 6%. Other states that had the bar and then had almost equal number of lawyers, the numbers, you don't really see, like, oh, if you didn't pass the bar, you have more complaints, that there's more crappy lawyers. There's a lot of crappy lawyers out there, but if you're just going to simply say passing the bar makes for better lawyers, maybe, maybe not, but just in sort of my quick kind of cursory view, I saw that Wisconsin doesn't have a whole bunch of complaints, but they don't have the bar. Mm-hmm. Get rid of the bar for other reasons, but don't get rid of the bar because certain people are underrepresented, because that's not a good move. Well, but it looks like Washington State Supreme Court is all in on this DEI crap. So I'm assuming that's why they put this in there.
In part, yes. The Bar Licensure Task Force said that they found with the bar it's disproportionately and unnecessarily blocks marginalized groups from becoming attorneys and at best is only minimally effective. So then they talked to this guy who's dean of law at Gonzaga, and he said that he would – if he had it his way, he would not allow more than 5% of a class to be excused from the bar. And he said the concern is that this would be something that people who already have lawyers in their families would take advantage of, and then that would reduce the goal of diversifying.
Why do you need to diversify? When I pick a lawyer, I don't care what color the person is. I don't care how tall they are. You've done nothing. You haven't, if you're a female, good for you. You haven't done anything to become a female. If you're black, you've done nothing to become a black person. If you're Asian, whatever it is, you've done, by the way, congratulations for putting absolutely zero effort into those immutable characteristics. It's very similar to, if you think about it this way. So 17% of American youth don't pass. They're too fat to get into the military. So you have two choices. Either it's an upstream problem and you fix the problem by making kids more active so they're not fat and therefore they can pass, or you lower the standards so that they don't have to run a mile. They only have to run, you know, 100 yards. They don't have to climb over a big wall. They can go over a small wall. You can change the standards by which, or if you can fix the upstream problem. So a poll or a national assessment education progress found 66% of blacks, 12th graders, possess little or no knowledge of math in the testing, and the same thing in reading. Well, if you have so few coming through even basic education, well, then you're not, they're not going to go into law school. So it's an upstream problem. Fix it upstream rather than changing the standards downstream, because then we all suffer. But they're doing this in medical school. They're doing this in law school. This is DEI. You're getting rid of merit and you're going to DEI. You can't have both. You can't have diversity and meritocracy at the same time. You have to take a choice, one or the other. So if they could say, listen, you don't need the bar because it doesn't say if you're a good lawyer or not, but if you're getting rid of the bar because you want more underrepresentative people, that's not the right way to go. And if you're a lawyer, you could put a little certificate next thing, you know, pass the bar exam. And then there would be a different standard. Oh, I'd rather have the guy that's passed the bar mm-hmm. than the person who didn't pass, because then there's always the suspicion, did you just get this because of an immutable characteristics you had nothing to do with?
No. Well, they do have an alternative, which are three experiential learning options. They have not uh-huh. developed those yet, of course, but that's the plan, is that you can take the bar or you can do one of these three other things.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, you go to hire a lawyer, would you say, like in a couple of years, did you pass the bar? And what school did you go to? And where'd you graduate from? Did you graduate from the top of your class? Wouldn't you want the best?
I wouldn't ask if they graduated the top of their class, because that could be a fluke, or that, I mean, they worked hard in school, but they may not be as diligent in their law practice. But I would want to know if they passed the bar, just because passing the bar is a significant accomplishment, and I think it's important.
Mm-hmm. 36,000, or is it 60-some, 36,000 or something, take it, and I think the failure rate is like 60-some percent mm-hmm. or something. They take it. They give you three shots at it, and then the third one, you can't take it again, you're out. So mm-hmm. I asked my brother about it. I said, what happens to get rid of the bar? He goes, it's just more bad lawyers. That's from my brother, who's a lawyer.
Mm. So. Well, we need those. Bad lawyers.
What? Bad lawyers.
Wow. I never thought of that.
Shakespeare. Yeah. What, Matt? More bad lawyers?
Yeah. Why not, right? Because then there'd just be more lawsuits to clog up the court system. And, yeah, what a great idea.
Okay. You know, you take a couple of days off and you come back and already you got two hot takes, three hot takes. Here we go. Back at it. Don Kelly, Sherry, Electro Show. Everybody here. Is my camera on or no, Andrew?
Camera does not appear to be working.
Oh, too bad. I got a haircut. Well, if they want to see me, somebody in there who knows how to fix it should fix it. Sherry?
Yes?
This story's right up your alley.
I know.
The Boeing whistleblower, John Barnett, said to, I think, a family friend or mm-hmm. a family member that if something happens to me, I did not commit suicide. So obviously he knew that he had the goods, or at least had some information that Boeing didn't want to be made public. He had done a video interview prior to his alleged suicide. The people who were at the hotel that he was staying in said that he seemed in fairly good spirits, had a quesadilla, and I think a Diet Coke. He scrolled through his phone. He didn't look despondent, was sitting there having something to eat. They found his driver's license in his hotel room. There's a camera there at the hotel that I think might have also been possible. I can't tell if it's on the parking lot or not. But when members of the hotel staff found him, he was in his car. The revolver, silver revolver, is still in his hand. 25% of the time, the deceased after suicide has the gun. 75% of the time, the weapon leaves the hand. So in this case, it's in his hand. And there is a small white note that was present, I think, on the front seat. And that's just about all we've gotten. Police say it is a they say it's a suicide, but a number of family members and others are saying, no, this guy, John, did not kill himself.
I know that he did not commit suicide. There's no way.
Barnett's family friend Jennifer said they had talked about this exact scenario playing out, but his words seemed like a premonition. He told her, don't ever believe it.
I knew John because his mom and my mom are best friends.
And when Jennifer needed help one day, Barnett came by to see her. They talked about his upcoming depositions in Charleston. Jennifer knew he filed an extremely damaging complaint against Boeing. He says the aerospace giant retaliated against him when he blew the whistle on unsafe practices.
He wasn't concerned about safety because I asked him, I said, aren't you scared? And he said, and his voice and his, the way he would talk, no, I ain't scared. He said, but if anything happens to me, it's not suicide. You know, I know that he did not commit suicide. There's no way. He loved life too much. He loved his family too much. He loved his brothers too much to put them through what they're going through right now.
And he basically told you not to believe it.
Yeah, not true. He's got too much to do, likes breathing. And he did. He had a lot of plans and things that he wanted to do.
What do you think happened?
I think somebody got in there and made, you know, money can buy anything nowadays, it seems like. And there's a lot of evil in this world. I think somebody didn't like what he had to say and wanted to shut him up and didn't want it to come back on anyone. So that's why they made it look like a suicide.
The last time she saw Barnett, it was at her father's funeral in late February. He was one of the pallbearers. Sometimes family and friends refer to him by his middle name, Mitch.
I think everybody is in disbelief and can't believe it. And I told everybody that I don't care what they say. I know that Mitch didn't do that.
And just because John Mitch Barnett is dead.
Yeah. Do you have theories on this one, Sherry?
Yeah, well, maybe not a theory, but I do think that it's very suspicious. The lawyers talked about what happened the day before that he committed suicide. He was in their office testifying, and he had also gone through hours of cross-examination. He wanted to go home that night to see his mom in Louisiana, and they tried to get this thing postponed for like a week or two to give him a break, and they said no. And so finally, he just said, that's fine. Let's get it over with. I want to put this behind me and get on with my life. So they said, okay. Off he went to the Holiday Inn. The next morning, they're waiting for him. And they didn't think it was a big deal because there had been torrential rain in the area. And they thought he was delayed in traffic. So a little bit later, they called the Holiday Inn. The Holiday Inn says, they don't know what's going on. They'll go check his room. And then they call back and they say, we can't give you any information. And then they call back again and they say, I'm sorry, you'll have to talk to one of the police officers. So they get in their car, they drive there, and that's when the whole thing unfolded in front of them, where the police cars were surrounding his truck. His truck was there. And it just, there was nothing leading up to this other than what we had talked about before, which is just the stress and the worry that comes with being a whistleblower.
Right.
There's no indication that he was struggling with that. His wife had died of brain cancer about 18 months ago, and he was looking forward to his life and was happy to get this done. He was going to go to his mom's house that night. Mm-hmm. So clearly he wanted to see his relatives, or he wanted to continue with a family connection.
So he's in his car. Let's assume just speculating from watching a lot of those cop shows. He's in the car. Why he's in the car, I don't know. He doesn't have his driver's license. So let's assume somebody that's a Boeing engineer is fairly methodical about how he keeps track of things. His license is not with him, but he's in the car for whatever reason. So somebody opens the door, shoots quickly, kills him, and then places the gun in his hand. The note, we don't know anything about the note. We don't know if it's in his handwriting, if it's typed or what. We don't know anything about that either. So, I mean, if all these clues that are out there, if they shot him somewhere else and then put his body in the car, then it takes some detectives to figure out, you know, a bunch of different things to determine if the body had been moved.
Right. I mean, if he shot himself.
Yeah, it's one of these things.
In the car.
Yes.
There would be blood splatter evidence. There would be all kinds of stuff that would show the trajectory of the bullet and where it entered his head, where it exited his head, and if all of that is consistent.
Well, that's if he shoots himself. But I'm saying if he's in the car, somebody opens the door and shoots him, that's a totally different thing, right? There's millions and millions, if not billions of dollars and people's careers on the line. If he has information that could really overturn the apple cart, then what does it matter to take somebody's life just to kind of keep things going? So you make a lot of enemies when you're whistleblowers. The people that do whistleblow tend to have a higher suicide rate and contemplate suicide higher than the general population. But that's normally after they've done the whistleblowing, after they've kind of come out with everything. Then after the big information, the reveal or whatever they have, then they could go despondent, they become alcoholics, the separation from family, divorce occurs, they lose friends, and they become more despondent, and then suicide might be a way out. But this is prior to? I don't know. And, okay, last question. Do you think we'll ever find out the truth if that is not the truth?
That all depends on the investigation. If someone is able to really investigate this and go through all the technical issues, the DNA, everything, then possibly...
But who would do that, though? But like, who does
that? The police.
If it's... Okay.
But they don't, if the coroner says suicide, they don't even really investigate, right?
No, they don't bother with it. But you can get a private investigator to come on the scene and do some of that. It's just the crime scene at this point, have they contained it? Is the truck impounded somewhere where they can still do all this stuff? It's hard to know what they're going to do. But it does seem very strange to me that Boeing, if Boeing for any reason whatsoever has their hands in this, they wouldn't be that stupid. I mean, really, would they? I guess they wanted to prevent this is all alleged, but if somebody wanted to do it, they'd have to do it then to prevent him from giving any more damaging information.
Mm-hmm. Here's what I think you should do. Take a couple more days off, go down there and open your own investigation because you watch a lot of Law and Order.
Dateline. I don't watch Law and Order. I watch Dateline, and that's almost almost as good as being an investigator yourself.
Show up there, you got a fake badge.
Right.
Yeah.
I got my Sherlock Holmes cap on.
Right, yeah, big pipe, smoking a pipe. You got the Columbo jacket on. You got them all on. You're like, Angela Lansbury, Murder, She Wrote. Yeah.
Smoking a big cigar, down to the
cigar
end.
And a pipe, yeah.
Right.
Big puff of smoke coming all around your head the whole time. Who's that? Oh, that's Elliker, yeah. Just looking around. Hey, guys, I'll take it from here. Ba-ba-ba-ba-ba. Canadians are different from you and me, Sherry, and everybody else. They're getting cars stolen in Toronto. I think every 40 minutes another car is stolen. They say it's a black market of car theft. I don't know what they do with it, whether they part them out or use them to rob stores and stuff like that we do here in Seattle. But the one of the cops there, and he was doing a press conference, and he was talking about why it's so important for the people of Toronto to remain safe. So if you happen to have a car, here's his advice to you, because, you know, they basically just, that's the safest thing to do if you happen to have a car and you are concerned about having your car stolen.
As provinces continue to struggle through a national car theft crisis, one Canadian police department is under fire for advising residents to leave their car keys outside their home to avoid physical altercations with thieves.
Leave your fobs at your front door because they're breaking into your home to steal your car. They don't want anything else.
In what almost sounds like a quote from The Simpsons' Chief Wiggum, Constable Marco Ricciardi of the Toronto Police Department told concerned residents to leave their key fobs outside at a community safety meeting at Etobicoke last month, and the reaction online has been visceral. On social media, some Canadians accuse the police of giving up and quiet quitting, while others express their decreasing confidence in the justice system and politicians.
Leave your keys outside.
And the people's reaction was, one of them was over $1 billion a year, so Toronto police can deliver super duper advice to make it easier for people to steal your car.
Some guy wrote, don't just leave it on the front porch. That's not fair. Leave it in the car and the car running because it's still cold. So when the person gets in the car, they're not uncomfortable. And any additional notes, like if you want to adjust the seat or anything else, do that for them as well. Yeah, when you are telling people, leave it on the front porch because they're breaking in with guns, which I think are illegal. They're saying, look, just give them the car. Just give them the fob. Just let them have the keys because that's all they want. I wonder if anybody did that.
I doubt it. And how do you know that's all they want? Home invasions and breaking and entering cases have risen 400% in 2023. Mm-hmm. So you think they're just going to stop at the car?
Well, you remember in San Francisco a couple of months ago, people were opening the trunk of their car, leaving that open, leaving the doors open, basically saying, look, there's nothing in here to steal, so don't break the windows.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
I guess that's one way to stop them from, I mean, what are you supposed to do? Also put like a little sign that says keys here and have an arrow so they know not to break in, that they're already laid out for them?
Yeah, because they might just break in. You're like, hey, why are you breaking in? I left the keys. Sorry.
Sorry. What's that about?
That's right, Canada. Suck on that.
Yeah. Is that part of the program? Hey, why don't you guys go take a holiday, hey?
Hey.
Huh? Hey? Poor Canadians. At least some Canadian bacon out there for them, too. Can we think of any more analogies? Any other things that's Canadian?
Well, maybe a hockey stick.
There you go.
Something like
maple
that.
Maple syrup.
Really
George
polite
Gordon Lightfoot
people.
Album. Yeah, there you go. Fine. Okay, we're... Sure, I know you're anxious. Just got back after a couple days.